This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. I want to start off by thanking my newest supporters, Michael and Ian. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast, along with Libby, James, John, Joel, and James. Thank you all for supporting the podcast. I've already been able to get more equipment for the show, as well as the gracefulatheist.com website, and I've got more plans coming up in the future to use that support to further the podcast. Every week, I've been asking you to rate and review the podcast on podchaser.com, and I realized I've thanked everyone for doing reviews on the Apple Podcast Store and not on Podchaser. So thank you to Matthew Taylor, Mayor Simca, and Marion for your reviews on podchaser.com. Those are very much appreciated. Beyond just doing reviews, please do help promote the podcast either on your social media or just tell a friend. Let them know how to find the podcast. And if you want to go the extra mile, you can help somebody who has an Android phone find a good podcasting app. I tend to recommend either Pocket Casts or Overcast, but there are many others. It's an odd thing in podcasting that over 50% of all listens are on iPhone and Apple Podcasts. And for some bizarre reason, even though there are more Android phones in the world, there are fewer people listening on Android. So help somebody out on an Android phone to find the podcast. Special thanks to John Monson and the Galaxy Brothers for today's interlude music. On to today's show. You might have noticed that I didn't thank Mike T for editing today's podcast, and that is because today's guest is Mike T, that Mike T. Mike and I have been chatting with one another for several months now, and he has been editing the podcast since December of 2020. I have greatly appreciated Mike's work on the podcast and all that he has brought to what is a burgeoning team. Mike's story is also fascinating. As you're about to hear, he grew up as a Catholic, but later in life as an adult, he was in more of a faith tradition that focuses on material success. And it was the disparity between the promises that he was being told and the reality of his life, and in particular his finances, that ultimately led to him questioning. We joke that his first mistake was doing research, and his second mistake was rereading the Bible. I am incredibly proud and excited to share my conversation with Mike T. Mike T, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
This is pretty exciting and a long time coming. We've been hanging out now for several months. You are that Mike T, the person who has been helping me out doing the editing for the podcast. It's been amazing so far.
Yeah.
So first of all, thank you.
Yes, definitely. I'm glad I can be a part.
Yes, I am so glad you've joined the team. It's really freed me up to expand on what we're trying to do with the podcast. So it's been amazing.
Sure.
We'll talk more about that a little bit later, but really what I want to hear about is your story. So where did you grow up, or what was your faith tradition when you were growing up?
Sure. Well, I am from the deep South.
Okay.
The sunny state of South Carolina, and I've pretty much been here all my life. I guess you can say I was just basically from middle-class family growing up. My parents, they're still together, which is kind of rare these days.
Yeah.
They were good parents, provided for me and my two brothers really well. And we had a little bit of a different religious upbringing, I guess you could say. My mom is Catholic. My dad, Southern Baptist. So a little bit of a different extreme there on the within the flavors of Christianity, but they made it work, and for whatever reasons, decided to raise us Catholics. So,
okay,
grew up going to church with my mom, and I wouldn't say we were exactly a religious family. We were just kind of, I guess, more moderate Christian, or even culturally Christian, I guess you could say.
Sure.
We went to church, to Mass. We kind of went through all the tenets of Catholicism, the First Communion, the confirmation classes, things like that. But it was just all kind of ritual for us. It was, you know, you go to church, you do that thing, you come home and live your life. And that was about it. She did try to teach us, you know, the basics of, it was more of the Catholic kind of traditions and everything. But we weren't exactly the, like a typical evangelical type family.
Right.
My dad, he grew up Southern Baptist his whole life. To his extent of religion was go to church on Sunday morning for 1 hour, and that was it for him for the rest of the week.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm good.
Yeah, we didn't have like Bible studies or, you know, we didn't pray together as family or anything like that. It was just, we were just probably as secular as you can be with, you know, okay, within the church and religion.
Did you go to a Catholic school or was it a public school?
No, did not go to Catholic school. I guess in the South, especially back, this is back during the 70s, Catholic churches were very rare where we were at. So, you know, Baptist was big, other mainstream kind of denominations were big. So the church we went to was very small. I think they had a school that went like through sixth grade, but for whatever reason, my parents decided not to send us there.
Okay.
We did go to a private school for much of my life, which was, it was not a Christian oriented school. It was just, it was private. Of course, by the time I got to high school, I did go to the public school system, and which I'm glad I did, because it kind of exposed me more to real life.
Yeah, the world.
I guess you could say. Yeah, the world. Yeah, actually.
Did you feel like that was your faith, or was it something that you took on personally?
Right. Yeah, I think it was just, it's just what you did. We didn't question it really. It was just, you know, church is just another thing you do during the week or on weekends. So I didn't give much thought to the eternal soul or anything like that. It was just, you know, you went to church, you got done with it, and then you kept on with your life.
And then you get through high school and into young adulthood. Did anything change then?
Yeah, so I guess starting probably my early teenage years, my brother and I took up music, playing music together. He played guitar. I eventually took up drums. And late 70s, I guess, you had these big iconic bands coming out, Kiss and Van Halen. And
yeah,
and that just really, that just struck us. You know, that's what we want to do. You know, we want to be rock stars.
Stadium rock.
Yeah, yeah. So we had that, we caught that fever. And my brother, he's a really good guitar player. And I followed along in his footsteps because that was just so cool watching him. And so we really dove into that pretty hard at it.
Okay.
So growing up during my teenage years, that's all we wanted to do. And I would say the anything to do with religion or anything, that just never crossed our minds. Yeah. And I guess in a way we were kind of fortunate that we weren't caught up in the evangelical or fundamental side of religion, and we didn't have to worry about trauma and stuff like that coming out of that. It was just, we were just typical teenagers, you know, just normal mischief like teenagers do.
Okay.
Nothing too bad, but we
up
just,
to no good.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. And I guess my first real taste of the evangelical world was through a friend that we met playing music. You know, when you're kind of in that scene or whatever of music, you meet all kind of people, members of, you know, your band members, they change constantly revolving door. So we come across all different kinds of characters playing music.
Yeah.
So we came across this one individual, and my brother knew him first. He was a little older than us. And, but turns out he was pretty radically saved, kind of, I would say he came out of the Jesus movement.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
You know, he had the long hair, he was in the rock and roll. And so it was kind of it was real intriguing to sit here and hear him kind of talk about God stuff and everything. And all I'd ever known was, you know, from a Catholic point of view. So it really piqued my interest to listen to him talk about it. So that was my first introduction to it. And he was kind of into the word of faith, I would say. Kenneth Hagin, Kenneth Copeland, yeah. You know, the prosperity gospel stuff and the mixed in with the Pentecostalism. And so all this was new to me. I was like, wow, you know, this is really neat. So I didn't know really what to think about it at first. We just became good friends and
yeah,
he kind of shared with me. It wasn't anything of any pressure or anything. It's just who he was. So
I think you were lucky because I definitely think that evangelicals have targeted Catholics in particular, in that a lot of evangelism is really getting people to switch from one form of Christianity to another.
Yes.
The people who are the most open to actually hearing evangelism are probably already believers. And I think Catholics in particular were a target for evangelicals because
sure,
they would come in and talk about, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus, right? And the language was just different.
Yes.
And it would sound like they were talking about some other experience in some way.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess this friend of mine, he was very charismatic, very influential.
Okay.
And he didn't use language necessarily like that, but he kind of presented God and Jesus from a more point of the Holy Spirit, the power there, the signs and miracles and wonders, you know. And
yeah.
And it was really radical, and it was really like, you know, Catholics were just so ritualistic and everything was so traditional, and there was none of that power there. There was none of that just wonder, and I don't know what the word might be for it, but and so having just normal conversations with him, it really just kind of opened my eyes to that side of God life, of church life. And
right.
So he wasn't beating me over the head with it, but I was just becoming more and more intrigued with it, I guess you could say.
Right. You were taking the initiative to go learn more.
Yeah, exactly. So that was probably about my junior year of high school, I would say.
Okay.
And so eventually I got out of high school, like you were saying, and kind of moved on to more adult life. Went to college some, tried to work full time, tried to keep my music going, which was really just kind of falling apart.
Okay.
It's hard to stay in music when you don't make any money at it.
Sure.
You know?
It's kind of like podcasting, Mike.
Yeah, something like that, I guess. So reality was setting in, you know, this is the real world. So
yeah,
I had to start thinking about my future and things like that. So as all that was happening, I eventually got to the point where I just didn't care about really staying with the Catholic Church. So my buddy invited me to come to church with him. I said, all right, well, we'll give it a shot, you know? And so it was a small, rather, I wouldn't call it a house church. It was, you know, an actual building, but it was a small church. And the people there were just, they were fantastic. They were nice, kind.
Yeah.
It was so laid back. It was totally opposite to what I knew growing up. And it was real personable. Kindness was there. The pastor and his wife, they kind of took me in and they had us over for dinner and things like that. And so,
yeah,
just, you know, instant family, instant community there, something Catholic Church never provided for me. So I guess that's where I really entered in at and kind of just stayed there.
Okay.
You know, I just fit in really, really easy. So,
yeah. You know, I think that it's important for us to acknowledge that the church here in general, I'm speaking, is really good at community and connection
sure.
with people, you know, just like having you over for dinner and
yeah,
being invested in your life. All of that is actually really good as long as it's not done for manipulative purposes.
Yes.
And I think it's one of the things, and we'll probably get to this discussion on the other side now in the secular world,
yeah,
we're all kind of saying, man, where's that community still?
Oh, yeah.
The other point that I want to make here, though, is that there's really nothing supernatural about that, right? It's just people being kind to one another.
Exactly.
But you make the good point. That wasn't something that you had experienced yet. And so that was very attractive. So you probably were getting deeper in.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, over the next couple of years, I kind of drifted in and out of a couple of different churches. These churches were small and they were limited in resources. So I would say they just fizzled out for any number of reasons. So, you know, once something kind of fell apart, you went and found another whatever was going on over here in the next place.
In the South, it's just down the block, right? It's
it's everywhere. Yeah. And of course, the bigger mainstream churches were all there, the Baptist, the Methodist, the Presbyterian. But all those, I looked at those churches as, they don't really get it. They don't get they're not on fire. They're kind of dead churches. I don't want to be a part of there. I want to go somewhere where I can have a full band, worship team, and the Holy Spirit's just really moving and that kind of thing.
It kind of is the 70s and 80s where that takes off. Right now, people probably listen, our mostly millennial audience here is probably thinking, well, yeah, of course you have a band. But back then, that was actually new. That was a new thing, being a focus at least.
Oh, yeah.
And, it is this, the Jesus movement, the Jesus freaks.
Yeah.
This breaking away from traditional church and having a much more lively experience.
Yes.
As well as mixed in with that, the Pentecostalism, the charismatic streams of tradition as well. So you have all of that going on at the same time. You're telling my story. I did the same thing when I was looking for churches.
Yeah.
I visited Baptist churches, Methodist churches, what have you. And it was just like, well, I don't want to go there. That seems boring.
Exactly.
And I happened to wind up in a Pentecostal church.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't want that. That was kind of what I grew up with in the Catholic church. Yeah, so eventually I got to the point where the churches around me, for some reason or another, they split up or the pastor left and things just weren't the same. And so I went through a period where I was pretty much didn't have a church home.
Okay.
So I was just kind of on my own, single guy. I missed having a community. I had friends, but not the kind of friends you could really just be real with and really connect with on a more in-depth basis. So, I was looking for somewhere to go, somewhere to be a part of. And it was ironic, but my dad, the church he went to, he told me one day that they had started this praise and worship service at his church, at the First Baptist Church. And that was like a bold move for them, because drums and that kind of a church was unheard of right at that time.
Yes. Yeah.
So I really was not too impressed. I just said, well, okay, I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
So I went there and it was pretty much what I expected. It was non-eventful and it was, they were trying. It was young people in there playing, you could tell they were kind of just beginning to play instruments and things, and they were trying to have their service. But what got me, I guess, to stay in there, the community-wise, was they had a strong adult singles group, and I got kind of hooked up with a couple of people there, and I plugged in with that, and it was good. It was just great friendship, the fellowship. These were people my age. They weren't married with kids. I could relate to them, and we did a lot of things together, and it was just fun. I just enjoyed it. It was kind of a breath of fresh air. The church itself wasn't exactly what I was hoping for. This the friendship and the community was good.
Your age cohort, it's people experiencing life the same way that you are.
Yeah.
Like you say, not with kids, but adults, and probably adults in particular, post-college, don't have as many opportunities for community. And here it is, just on a platter. Here's
some friendships. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So eventually I would meet the girl who would be my wife there. So,
all right.
Yeah. So that worked out well. And so I guess we're going on this month, it'll be 23 years.
Wow. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thanks. I guess we could say we've had a good marriage. You know, certainly we've had our tough times and things, but overall we've had a great relationship. And so we got married after about, I'd say after about 6 months of dating. We didn't have a long engagement period or anything. We felt right for each other, and
yeah,
and we just moved on with our lives. And so we bounced around through a few different churches here and there. We kind of, as we changed, as we grew, we wanted different things.
Yeah.
She grew up Southern Baptist, so she was used to all what she was already in, but I wanted something a little different. So we, over time, decided to kind of explore some other options, and eventually she really bought into more or less the type of church environment I wanted to be a part of.
Okay.
And we ended up in, you know, non-denominational churches that were more spirit-filled, more of teaching the gifts of the Spirit and all that thing. And she really thrived there. And I think she was kind of glad that she was able to get out from under what she grew up knowing too. And so we served faithfully in all different kinds of ministries and music ministries. Both of us did music. She likes children. She's an educator, so she's always been invested in that.
Okay.
And I guess just over time, it kind of brought me to where I'm at now, which is a whole nother story with my deconstruction. But
yeah. Right before we get there, again, just one more point that I think you
sure
really captured is that the church provides you a place to use your talents, your natural talents. So your
sure
wife is yeah an educator, and so she's able to work with kids, and both of you are musicians, and you know, you're able to use those talents. And again, in the secular world, those are rare opportunities, right?
Yes.
Unless that happens to be your career. I don't know why I keep hammering this, but I just think it's really fascinating to me how we as human beings, we need to feel useful, to have, you know, maybe our hobbies, the things yes that we care about a lot, but that maybe isn't going to bring home a check
yes
every month, to be able to use those talents. And those opportunities are just rare and far and few between. And church provides that environment.
Yes, it certainly does. Yes. And I'll go back to the friend who initially influenced me heavily with Christian music. He introduced me to the whole realm of Christian rock music. And so that was a big influence to me.
Okay.
I just knew that if I have these talents or gifts, as I would have called them in the, you know, in the church,
right,
I wanted to use that for God's glory and for his purpose.
Right.
I had to then find places that were receptive to wanting to expand musically and have, you know, full bands and things like that. So that's what steered us to churches that we were a part of.
Okay. Well, obviously you've hinted that the story didn't end there. So what were some of the first cracks in the armor? What started to get you thinking?
Yeah, well, just like everybody, it's never just one thing.
Exactly.
It's, yeah, it's all those lots of little things that creep up. And all of my life, I've considered myself, I guess, a critical thinker.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have used that phrase because I probably wouldn't have exactly heard of it, but I always like to be rational and analyzing things and use logic. But for some reason, when it came to religion, it was kind of a blind spot for me, for whatever reason.
You're telling my story, Mike.
So you just, I guess when you're born into it, I consider myself heavily doctrinated, but when it came to God, it was just, there was no debating that. That was real, you know? And
yeah,
so you just presumed that all that stuff was real. And one day you would get it right and get your life together and serve God like you're supposed to and all that stuff. But as far as really starting to see problems and issues, I would say it probably started about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I try to look back now throughout the course since I got out of high school, was there anything that ever came up that caused any kind of doubts or caused me to question or think? And it's hard to really remember if there was. I think there probably was, but I probably just kind of subconsciously, you know, stuffed it to the back of my mind and
yeah,
said, hey, I'm not going to deal with that right now.
Cognitive dissonance is an amazing thing.
It is.
It's amazing what you can absorb and ignore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I guess beginning about 5 years ago, as I said, I look back on it and we were in a church that was really a word of faith type church. And I think I remember in I think it was CG was talking about this kind of movement a few weeks ago. And they were big on the whole signs and wonders, miracles, that type thing. And again, great people, loving, caring, kind people. And it just, it seemed like they were always teaching healing and I guess prosperity to a point, not too heavy of the prosperity thing, but just life in general is Christians, we should really be, we should be successful. We should be overcoming, you know, and
God is presented as intervening in our lives, acting in our lives on a daily basis.
Sure. Yeah. And I thought that was great. You know, I said, yeah, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for all this to start happening and manifesting. And the thing about it is I looked around, not just at my own life, because, you know, as far as we went, my family, we always did pretty well and no serious issues or anything. We were, as I would say, blessed.
Yeah.
But I looked around at other people and the struggles and things that people were going through. And I said, this is not adding up. You know, something's not right here. We're saying one thing and but things are not happening as I thought they should be happening. And we had a lot of different preachers and speakers come through, and I can't really remember names, but they were supposedly kind of big names in this kind of movement. And they would come through and give their message and preach and give these just great testimonies of miracles and signs and wonders and things happening. And and it was just always of how it used to be, of how things used to,
or over there in the mission field or somewhere just not here.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember one particularly, it was a lady came through and she was the daughter of some great evangelist, not televangelist, but just this traveling faith healer guy, and telling these remarkable stories of people coming back from the dead and things like that. And and I just kind of got to scratching my head a little bit. I was like, is this really true? Or is this just another one of these fish stories? You know, it starts growing over time.
Yeah.
So it was then that I started doing some research and I started looking up this lady. I looked up her father. I'd taken notes and I couldn't find anything. It seemed like if something like what she was saying and these great stories happened, surely there was some news story of it somewhere. Even if it was 30, 40 years ago, there should have been something that came about from it.
Somebody coming back from the dead would be big news, yes.
Yeah, and so it kind of led me down more rabbit holes. So I got into more of a general, all right, well, let me look up faith healers and see what's going on. So it led me to Benny Hinn. It, was it Catherine Coleman, I think, where he kind of got his start. And just the more I looked into this stuff, there was really no substantial evidence for any kind of great healings.
Right.
I kind of started researching about the whole placebo effect of, you know, when you got all these people that are just pumped up and they're just these big rallies and things, you know, the mind is a great thing. It can do all kinds of things, you know.
And super powerful, yeah.
Super powerful, yes. That's a good way to put it. And so that was kind of the first bricks that came out of the foundation, so to speak.
So your first mistake was doing research, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. That didn't really cause me to doubt. It only caused me to doubt or kind of rethink, well, maybe they're not getting it right. Something's not right with this. So I need to really dig in and find out, well, what is God really teaching here? What is he saying to me? So it was at about that time that I said, well, I'm a quit reading or listening to so much of these testimonies and these other preachers. I'm just going to dig right into the Bible and see what it really has to say.
Okay.
So that was probably my second
mistake.
So I really tried to start objectively reading it from the beginning. Let me just start over with it. And it was there that little things started coming apparent to me. This doesn't make sense.
Right.
This is not adding up. So
was there a book in particular or an idea or a passage that you can remember that was particularly difficult to absorb?
Yeah. So at first, it was kind of the first two chapters of Genesis.
Sure. Yeah. We didn't get far, Mike. Okay.
No. I noticed that there was two stories here. It's like, wait a minute. How can these two stories happen this way?
Yeah.
It didn't cause me like just terrible doubt. It was just, okay, why the two stories, you know, because they're kind of conflicting with each other. And I was like, you know, the Bible can't contradict itself. You know, that's not what I've heard.
Right.
That was a thing. And I guess as I got through with some of the other biggies, the flood story, I guess the next biggest thing was the getting into Exodus when it started into slavery. And now we're getting on a moral type issue. And I'm right. Like seeing these passages that condone and support slavery.
Yeah.
And that right there just really had me conflicted.
Yeah.
So from there, I had to start researching more. How can this be? You know, how can a good, loving, all-knowing God do this, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the next big thing that kind of fell for me.
That's a big one, definitely.
Yeah. I think, I don't know how much time had passed. This is probably happening over the course of about a year, I would say.
All right.
I would say the next thing that really came about was had to do with finances.
Okay.
So my family and I have three kids. My oldest was getting into college. You know, we were starting to have some bigger financial needs.
Sure.
And we were having some struggles. And so I said, you know, my wife and I talked about it. Maybe we need to find maybe some help financially, whether it be through consolidating some debt, trying to get some things to where we could manage a little better.
Right.
Because we were having some problems just month to month, making it month to month, paycheck to paycheck. And so we tried a few different places to get some help, and we just didn't have the credit, or our situation just didn't allow us to get the help we needed. So somehow I got on the phone with, I think it was like a credit counseling agency.
Okay.
And I knew about them. I really didn't want to go that route, but the guy was nice that I was talking to, and he went through my finances with me and expenses and income and stuff. And then he got to the point of, do you do any charitable giving, any tithing or anything like that? I said, yeah, we tithe 10% of our income every month, right off the bat. So he said, well, you know, have you ever thought about just cutting that out for a while till you can catch up, till you can get your head above water, or maybe just cutting back? And all my, I guess, Christian life, we were told, or we believed, that you don't compromise on this. This is what you give from the start, you know, before you pay for anything, because if you do that, God's gonna provide and take care of you. And so that was our mindset going into this. But for some reason, when I was talking to him, when he just mentioned that to me, I don't know if it was just kind of an affirmation thing or actually just having that discussion with someone else, it almost gave me this relief to where, you know what? It's okay that if God is really concerned about us in our finances and making ends meet, then he would provide. And well, up to this point, even with our faithful giving, he's not providing.
Right.
It's not working. This formula that's supposed to be working is not working the way we've been doing it. And, you know, when we get to the end of the month and you're buying groceries on credit cards, something's got to give, because that's not going to sustain itself very long.
Right.
So I decided, well, you know what? I'm just going to stop the tithing, stop the giving. Let's see what happens over a couple of months. And thankfully, we were able to start gaining some ground on paying down some debts and start putting food back on our table without the credit cards.
Yes.
And so that was another thing. I was like, everything I'd been told didn't happen. And so I just started wondering, well, what else am I missing out on? Mm. And so that was a really big step for me. And I guess the biggest mistake I made during that time is I didn't tell my wife.
Oh.
Yeah. So we finally talked about it. She wasn't happy about it, but I think she did understand that, hey, we can't sustain living like we were living.
Right.
And look, we're getting along better now. So let's just leave it at here. And if God wants something different, he'll reveal it to us.
Yeah. You feel guilty for not giving because you've been told all of your life that mm-hmm. you have to do this thing. You have to do this and that God expects it of you. So even though the obvious answer here was, you know, take care of your debts, take care of food on the table. Those are the obvious priorities, you know, from any objective point of view. That was a struggle for you and your wife to overcome.
Exactly. So I started doing a little more research into, it really wasn't so much about the church in general itself. It was about, why do I believe what I believe? Kind of the epistemology thing.
Right.
And so I said, I really want to know the truth. And I, putting these pieces together with what I've been reading as far as things in the Bible not making sense, with slavery and with, you know, these other stories like the flood and stuff, how could they ever actually happen this way? And so I started getting more into science, I guess you could say, evolution. I had pretty much taken on the whole creationist 6,000-year, you know, young earth viewpoint, ideology. I started, you know, digging into that some more. And I just found it fascinating that what science had to say about human evolution and biological evolution. And I was like, wow, could this really be, you know, true? After all, right. After I had for so long had just considered it just some kind of a nefarious
a plot
of secular science to fool everybody and to, you know, just a ploy of the devil to deceive us all. And it was about that time that I went and visited a friend of mine, and he was really into astronomy and science. He was a big proponent of evolution. I didn't really know it at the time, but when I got to his house, he had these really cool displays of fossils and things. And he started telling me all about this stuff. And I was like, wow, you know, here's this fossil that is such and such million years old. And then, and it just, looking at this stuff, you know, in real life, and it just started the wheels turning, and I said, I've got to look into all this more. And it was just fascinating to do the research and to find out that this is fact. You know, it's proven science. It's every day it's something new's coming out. I just really wonder, well, how can all this play into what I've grown up learning about the Bible and about God? And how does all of this, you know, how does all this reconcile? And I didn't have an answer for it.
You used a big word there, the epistemology, but I think this is really important. Epistemology being how we know what we know, or the process mm-hmm. of knowing what we know. And there is an epistemology of faith, right?
Yeah.
Epistemology of faith says the Bible is authoritative. It's God's inspired word. And like you said earlier, it shouldn't have any contradictions, and it
exactly.
has authority to tell us what we should do in our lives. And so anything that seems to contradict that Bible, both our own cognitive dissonance, but also that epistemology of faith is saying that's irrelevant. It's wrong. Maybe it's a plot, yeah. like you say. It's yeah. And it gets discarded. It gets thrown away.
Sure.
But you're telling my story too here about just the science. The idea of science is that true things don't deconstruct.
Yeah.
The more critical you are of a true thing, the more true it becomes.
Exactly.
It's the exact opposite epistemology. It uses the human competition and antagonism toward one another to its own benefit, right? And so I think that believers, particularly young Earth creationists, may not understand is if their arguments were solid and good and had evidence, they'd be Nobel Prize winners, right?
Yeah.
Everyone would acknowledge that this thing was true. It isn't a plot if you have the evidence. Yes.
That is true.
And so I think many of us, our deconversion stories are that slow change of epistemology from accepting faith as a good enough answer to, I need a bit more evidence, to the house of cards is starting to fall down.
Sure. Yeah. And at this point I was just, you know, I was praying. I was just really asking God, show me something, you know, reveal yourself to me and how can I reconcile everything that I'm seeing, because it's just not adding up. It's not making sense to me and I need to know. And, you know, everything from the morality of what I'm seeing in the Bible, that's just some horrible stuff. That's not, you know, if this is from you, God, this is not good.
Right.
And I need to know something. And I kind of started sharing with my wife a little bit about these questions I had. And she didn't know really the extent to which I was going down this path. She just tried to, I guess she tried to understand, but she really didn't understand. She just told me to pray about it. And I said, yeah. And I prayed and I never heard anything. And I wasn't trying to say, all right, I'm just getting out of all this altogether. I was trying to hold this thing together.
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't want it to go this way. I didn't wake up one day and say, hey, I'm not going to do the Christian stuff no more.
Yeah.
And so I said, I got to find some more answers, you know? And
yeah,
I think, it was about this time that I came across Bart Ehrman.
Okay.
And started reading some of his materials, some of his books. And I just really, the way he wrote, I just really dove in head first into his stuff. It was good. So I read numerous books by him, and the more I read, the more I was like, oh man, it is just, you know, it just kind of like opened up for me there. I just felt like I could see so much clearer why these questions I had were causing me so many problems.
Right.
And it just became apparent that religions and supernatural stuff is, it's just a man-made construct, simply put it.
Yeah, exactly. In other words, God is in our image, not the other way around.
Exactly, yeah.
One other point I want to make here is that Bart Ehrman is the boogeyman to many believers.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, I think on this side of faith, what I have learned to appreciate is the humanity in the Bible, right?
Yeah.
The reason that slavery is in there is that was their culture. I'm not saying it was right in any way. It's horrifying.
Sure.
But seeing the context of the people at that time in that particular culture is valuable. And I think that's what Bart Ehrman brings out, right?
Right.
Bart Ehrman is not throwing out the Bible. He spent his entire life studying it.
No, yeah, that's right.
He's just saying, let's take it for what it actually is, a human story.
Yeah, not to read into it, making it out to be something it's not. And it's, you know, just like with human evolution, religions have evolved.
Exactly.
The Christianity that we have today is not what it was 500 years ago or even 100 years ago. You can, you know, go back to slavery in this country, that the Bible was used to prop it up. And
absolutely.
And it's just, we wouldn't think about that today. So yeah, that really opened up doors. I started reading more books. I started just really, you know, trying to process all this and what that meant for me and going forward. And I found it fascinating. But then it just all of a sudden, well, how am I gonna? What am I gonna do now with my life?
Yeah,
this is gonna affect more than just me. It's my wife is, she's very committed in,
right.
And how do I need to deal with, you know, with this concerning her? Because I think that was a mistake I made, as I kind of went off on this tangent and this research and this whole process and kind of left her out of it, maybe.
That's hard. I definitely want to release you from some of that guilt.
Yeah.
I hear stories of people that deconstructed, deconverted simultaneously or independent, mm-hmm. but at the same time. But that, I think, is the exception,
yeah,
not the rule. I think yours and my experience are much more common.
Yeah.
That one person starts doing that research, and there will be resistance to hearing about that research from the other partner. And so it's not that you're hiding it from them. It's that, you know, they wouldn't be receptive to it.
Yeah, exactly. And as you're going through this in real time, you're really not, I don't know if I want to say expecting, but yeah, I guess I didn't know what to expect. And the farther you go into it, it just builds and builds. And at the time, as I was going into researching and really trying to find the truth, I didn't expect the outcome to be, well, I'm not going to be a believer when I get onto the other side. So right. I guess that's why I kind of just did this on my own, this deconstruction process, kept it to myself until it was just, I was out on the other side looking back.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, you begin the process trying to keep it all together.
Yeah.
You're thinking, surely someone.
Exactly.
There's some book, there's some Christian author that explains all these questions that I have. And the further you go down that rabbit hole looking for answers to hold it together, you have this, you know, maybe not a moment, but you slowly transform from trying to hold it together to, wow, I've been believing something that has no evidence for all of my life. What do I do now?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I guess that pretty much catches me up until today. Speaking of my wife and myself, we've had discussions, and they've been hard.
Yeah.
It's a painful process when, you know, you've had shared the same worldview for so long, and then all of a sudden, you know, one of you drifts away from it and pretty much totally rejects it now. And it's been hard to try to put it into words with her, and it's just, there's no easy way to do it.
Right.
And it's painful for her, I think, because it not only, I guess she sees it as something that's bad for me, it's, I think it's also causing her to maybe rethink some things or kind of reevaluate, and maybe what he's saying might have some truth to it. And it's probably painful at that point to not want to hear anything else. Once you look at that, you know, the man behind the curtain, and kind of see the, you know, that cliche there, it's hard to unsee what you're seeing, you know, I've already seen. So
one of the things that holds my hand from trying to actively dissuade my wife is, I think, to the years leading up to my own deconversion. And I think, you know, if someone had come along and said, here are, you know, 10 reasons why you shouldn't be a Christian.
Yeah.
That would have just caused me to dig in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I recognize that in myself. And so the way I approach it with my believing family members is, and I'm trying to be as explicit as possible that I support them, that I love them.
Sure.
I love them for who they are, not for what they believe, and just keep trying to communicate that as much as I can.
Yeah, and I've found that out too, I guess, the hard way.
Yes.
Yeah. The debate style kind of present facts and data and that kind of stuff. It's you know, this is about emotion, so it's just not going to work. And
right.
So we're working it out. We've come a long way. We try to make space, make time to maybe discuss things in a way that we're not putting up defenses, so to speak, but to just really try to do it in a loving way, in a graceful way. And that's the best we can do for right now. It's just keep at it.
When I did the interview with Michelle, my wife, I thought it was interesting to hear her explicitly state that it took her several years before she wanted to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
And I don't want to imply that it's all 100% better. You know, there's still tension there. It's under the surface at times. But we are able to talk about things once in a while. Like recently we were listening to one of her podcasts, so a Christian podcast, and, you know, spark conversation. And we're just able to talk about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't making a judgment about it in any way. We were just, hey, you know, we used to have this thing in common. I still have a Bible college degree.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
we can discuss this.
Yeah.
Being invested in what she cares about is really important.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's what I always emphasize is I just want us to have good conversations. You know, we don't have to agree, but we can respect each other's viewpoints and try to encourage each other just to be better people.
The other tension in a family where one person has deconverted is kids.
Yeah.
Have you had that discussion at all with your wife?
Not too much. No. Yeah. That's kind of a ongoing situation. I don't know. We just haven't had any discussion really. And I think part of that is due to the pandemic for the past year. So they have not been in church, you know, attending church regularly at all. You know, it's been a year now. Yeah. That's probably a good thing for me. My oldest he's in college, so he's adulthood now. Don't concern myself with that too much. He does his own thing. Mother two are at home, and yeah, I don't know. We'll have to kind of see where we go with that. My youngest, he's 13, and he's like a walking encyclopedia. He really researches animals and things like that, and evolution and everything. And so he's very knowledgeable about, you know, the sciences, and he's very scientific minded.
Yeah.
And my wife knows that, you know, she doesn't have any way she can refute what he's what he's learning, you know. So I don't know where that'll eventually go.
So we got in touch several months ago. You had responded to my begging on the podcast for someone to help out with editing.
Yeah.
I want to hear a little bit about why you were interested in doing that. What is it that you get out of all the work and my perfectionism and criticism?
Yeah.
Why would you put yourself through such a thing?
Well, first of all, I guess you could say I really appreciate the work that you do, that so many other podcasters do, content creators who are out there getting the message out that it's okay to embrace humanity and to look at science and facts and just look at a worldview that doesn't involve the supernatural, the mysticism of religion, and just gives grace to humanity. And so I guess when I started hearing your plea for some help, I said, well, you know, I do that kind of stuff and I could really help. And that really motivated me to reach out and say, hey, if I can do this, let me help, because I don't really have any other outlets, so to speak. I'm pretty much insulated by Christian family and everything all around me. So this is something I could do on my own, which I wouldn't have to worry about you know, making it a big thing with anybody else. I could just do it and be contributing to something that's worthwhile. So that's, I guess, maybe to answer your question.
That's it. That's amazing. This goes back to what we were discussing earlier about one of my goals, one of, I think, the secular community's goals ought to be, is providing these kinds of opportunities, that what we felt when we were in the church, where we could use our skills, our hobbies, our talent, the things that we enjoy doing.
Sure.
We need those kinds of opportunities to do the same in a secular environment. I've already said thank you, but I want to, we'll say it on mic again.
Oh.
How thankful I am for the work that you're doing, and that it's well beyond that you're doing the editing. It's that what that frees me to do.
Sure.
Because I'm not spending the time doing that editing is really valuable, right? Like, I'm able to communicate with more people. I'm able to think more deeply about what I'm saying on mic.
Things like that.
So it is a huge contribution. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. I'm honored to do it. So it's been great for me too. Just hearing more interviews, more people from all different walks of life. And it's just, you know, it's therapy. It's good to really connect with others and their stories.
Right. So besides hanging out with me doing the podcast, have you found any other community outlets, secular community outlets?
Yeah, I do a little bit, some groups on Facebook.
Okay.
There's a few on there. And I do have a good friend. I mentioned him earlier. He's in the science. He plays music. It's John who's done the music with us, you know. And
Yeah,
he's been a great friend. His whole life, he's been agnostic, atheist.
Okay.
He's never identified with Christianity or religion, even though his father was a Methodist minister.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, he's got a great story. I'd love to get him to come on here and give his story. Yeah,
absolutely. John, if you're listening, just get in contact with me.
Yes, John's been a great friend to me. And
fantastic.
Really, that's about it. Him, my younger brother has been good. He's kind of in a similar situation to me. I don't think he ever got into the evangelical side of religion, of the fundamentalism or anything. He kind of stayed in the Catholic realm for a while, but okay, now he's just, you know, doesn't do any of that. So we can talk openly. And
that's great.
But that's really about it right now. Yeah, it's this area that I live in is highly, you can imagine.
Yes.
Everybody's a Christian of some sort of flavor or whatever you want to call it here.
Yeah.
Anybody you run into is basically like that.
Actually, you're lucky in that you have a very good friend and a brother. Just having someone that you can, outside of COVID, be in the same room with.
Sure.
And talk about these things, I think, is really, really invaluable.
It is. Yeah, definitely.
I've got one more question for you. It's a bit oddball.
Sure.
See if I can frame it properly. As you know, because you've been editing for me, a common theme that has just emerged in the podcast is this concept of religious but not spiritual. And this idea of finding and keeping maybe ritual in our life or intentional, and I'm using scare quotes, quote unquote, spiritual, basically taking out the supernatural entirely, rejecting that, but also acknowledging that human beings need something, this community, collective search for meaning.
Right.
I'm curious if the Catholic background for you gives you insight into that. Are there any rituals that you do today that are reinterpreted for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say probably for me, no.
Sure.
I understand that a lot of people do benefit from that sort of thing. I think as committed, as sold out as I was to serving God, to being obedient to the word and all that, church life to me was just rather boring. if that makes
honesty, love it.
I loved going there and connecting with the people.
Right.
Conversations with the people. But as far as just the service or the actual going through the motions of that part of it, I never did enjoy it, so to speak.
Okay.
I guess playing music was my one kind of out because I got to be part of the band playing. And if I wasn't doing that, I don't know what, I don't know what would have been my path. I don't know how things would have worked out without that, because it was just honestly, I didn't gain much from just sitting in a room hearing somebody else give me their opinion of what the Bible said. If that makes sense, I don't know.
It does. Yeah, I mean, it totally does. I asked the question knowing that the answer could be no. So
yeah,
that's honest. So I appreciate that. So your wife is still a believer. Do you participate in her church in any way?
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it is the church that we are part of, or that we've been a part of for about 4 years now, I am actually on staff at this church. So,
wow.
Yeah, I am a secret agent there. You know, I'm a sleeper agent or whatever you call it.
I doubt that you are the only person, maybe not in that particular church, but in church in general. I think that's probably much more common than you think.
So, yes, I got hired by the church back probably early in my kind of questioning days.
Okay.
So, I guess due to my experience with audio, video, the background there, we talked about it. I was initially just saying, hey, I want to come play music, you know, on the praise team. And,
right.
And when they found out more of what I could do, they really needed somebody to head up their AV team. So they offered me the job and I was like grateful for it. You know, I was like, wow, yeah. You know, it's more than I ever expected. I didn't expect to actually get paid to, you know, yeah, come in here and serve in the church. And but I can see where they're coming from. They're pretty, I wouldn't call them exactly a mega church. So it's kind of has that feel.
Okay.
It just doesn't quite have those numbers. I don't know if it ever will. So I got that job, and simultaneously, not long after that is when the real deconstruction process starting to happen for me.
Okay.
And it could be a struggle at times, because here I was actively involved, thankfully not in any kind of like ministry with other people. I was just a tech guy, you know?
Right. Okay.
I'm back here in my little space dealing with my computers and sound equipment and video equipment, but I'm still there and I'm still hearing everything that's going on. And the more I hear it, the more I'm just like, oh gosh, did I really believe like this? Oh gosh.
Yeah.
There's a lot of triggering issues, I guess you could say, and it's an ongoing thing for me. So I've kind of had to find that way to just become numb to it, or learn to just shut it out, or come to some terms with not letting it bother me.
Right. I think that was the shocking thing for me, post-deconversion and then still not participating for me, but just attending church.
Okay.
Was I could not unhear the manipulation.
Yeah.
The manipulation was so loud and clear.
Oh, yeah.
And so undeniable, mm-hmm. that with new ears, so to speak, was really shocking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel you that you do have to go numb a little bit. You have to.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, not let it dig into you.
Right. And if not for the pandemic, I would probably have left by now, but I've kind of found myself in a place where, okay, I can be kind of safe here. I can do a lot of work from home, so I'm just going to stick this out until later. And but eventually, I think I need to get out, though.
Okay.
It's just not me. I mean, there's great people there. They're, you know, just like any other church. You got people who are, you know, you become friends with and things like that. But,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
Have you connected with the clergy project? If you haven't already, and just for the listeners to hear, like, super important project where if your livelihood is working for the church and you go through this process, they have a lot of pastors, missionaries,
yes,
worship leaders, tech people, the whole nine in the same boat as you are. And
right,
they're having the same experience. Is that something that you've done?
Yeah, I actually have. And so I'm a member of the Clergy Project. And
okay,
yeah, it's great. It's a great organization, a great outlet for people in my situation. And it's probably something that I should probably try to plug in more to, but it requires effort, you know, to really sure. to dig into it and to reach out to people. And but it's there, and I'm sure if I needed it more, I know it's there, and I would use it a lot more. I do see a lot of people stories who have lost so much more than I have, and
yeah,
it's been good for them, especially those who, you know, they lose jobs, or even worse, they lose their relationships, you know, marriages and right. family. And I'm just glad to see that that is something that is out there helping people.
That's amazing. Mike, if someone else is in the beginning process, they've just started to do the research.
Yeah.
They've made their first mistake. And I don't mean this podcast. What resources would you recommend for people to go explore?
Yeah, that's another good question. I would probably just tell them to look into the historical scholarship of the Bible. That's really what spoke to me. And I guess it's probably different for everybody what really speaks to them. But as I said, I like Bart Ehrman a lot, and there's a lot of other sources out there similar to his. I would just read, just really dig in and do some reading. If you're more into looking at it from a scientifically point of view, you know, Richard Dawkins, The God Delusions, a super great book. I think I read Dan Barker, his Godless book. And
yeah,
and really, to be honest with you, when you start reading people who have been in ministry, they've been pastors, reading their stories, I think probably spoke to me more than anything.
Right, like Dan's book, for sure.
Yeah, like Dan's. And, you know, there's plenty of podcasts, yours, of course.
Yes.
Thinking Atheist and Friendly Atheist, you know, him at Meta. And
yeah.
There's a good blog, Debunking Christianity, John Loftus.
Yeah.
He's got, there's some great articles on there that are from lots of different people, and some really good meat there to really dig into if you want to really dig into more of the Bible and in the contradictions. And those all help me.
Well, thank you for those.
Yeah.
Mike T, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks, David.
Final thoughts on the episode. As you can hear, Mike is just an amazing person. I think that his story is one that is very common. Having been mostly a cultural Christian where church was just a part of the background, and then having some event in your life or a person, like in his case, a good friend, who leads you into some deeper commitment until you find yourself entirely absorbed. I really appreciate Mike's honesty. He talks about really was the music that drew him to the church experience. And I think that was one of the more fascinating parts of our conversation, that recognition that the church provides a space for people to use their talents, to use their hobbies, the things that they are passionate about that may not be the things that you can make money doing, but you want to do. I'm thinking of people who want to sing, people who want to teach, people who want to play music. All of those talents find a home in the church. I think Mike's story gets very raw when he begins to talk about the challenges of his finances, and particularly being in a faith tradition that focuses on material success and the disparity between what he was experiencing in his finances and what he was being promised. And the joke that we came up with of his first mistake was doing the research on some of these evangelists and then doing more research and then learning more about science. And then ultimately going back to the Bible. He got me laughing so hard when he talked about just the first two chapters. And it was like, wait a minute, here's a problem. I really appreciate Mike's honesty and the rawness of his story. Beyond that, I will say again how thankful I am for Mike's work on this podcast, doing the editing. You could hear that passion to do something on this side of faith. On this side of deconversion, we still have those raw talents. We still have those hobbies. We still have those passions to do something. And I'm thankful to have provided a place for Mike, and it is mutually beneficial. So thank you, Mike, for being on the team. Thank you for telling your story here today. I really greatly appreciate that. Mike also wanted me to let you know that he eventually would like to have a local group or community where people who are having doubts or looking for answers could have a safe place to have a conversation and work through those doubts. You can email me at gracefulatheist@gmail.com and I can forward that information to Mike if you would like to hear more about what Mike has plans for, or if you just want to tell him how important his story was for you. Mike also mentioned the Clergy Project, and I just want to promote them here as well. The Clergy Project provides a safe space for people who are employed by the church in any capacity and who find themselves in the process of deconstruction, deconversion, or doubt. I highly encourage you, if that is you, if you're in that spot, please reach out to the Clergy Project. They are a great organization. I love what Linda LaScola and Dan Dennett are doing there. It's a very important resource in the secular community. The obvious secular grace thought for this week is about the need for the secular community to provide the same kinds of spaces for people to use their talents. In regards to the podcast, I'm going to open it up again to just say, if you have a talent that could be beneficial to the podcast, that you think would be beneficial to you to participate in the secular community, please get in contact with me. I don't want our imaginations to be too small here. It could be anything from graphic design. It could be storytelling, poetry, music. It could be PR, marketing, web design, copy editing. You get my point. There are just 1,000 things that could be done to make the podcast better, and I am interested in providing that space for you. Beyond that, my challenge is to the secular community at large to provide those opportunities for people like you. Many months ago, when I had Anthony Pinn on the podcast, he talked about why the Black church is so important to the Black community. And it was much more than just about a confession of faith. It is a community. It is a safe space. And what we are not doing, what we are failing at as a secular community, is providing that soft landing, as Anthony Pinn put it. We need to provide a soft landing for people. And that includes not only being a loving, graceful community, but also providing opportunities for people to be the best versions of themselves, for providing opportunity for people to serve, for providing opportunity to feel purposeful and meaningful. That is the secular grace thought of the week. I have a number of very interesting conversations coming up that I'm excited to share with you. I've also had a number of really interesting conversations off mic with people, and at least one of which will eventually become a podcast episode. I really thank you for allowing me to be purposeful and meaningful in my life. This is so profoundly important to me. I cannot not speak out and tell the world about secular grace and loving people and what it is like to be free and have integrity. And that gives me purpose and meaning, and you are providing that opportunity for me. So thank you to you, the listener. Until next time, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application, and you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist You can Google deconversion. You can Google secular grace. You can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.